I'm on the phone with Stéphane Christophe, who is a Montreal-based journalist and community organizer. He is currently in the Philippines participating with the People's International Observers Mission during national and local elections time there. Stéphane is posting updates from Manila at twitter.com/spirodon. Hey, Stéphane.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being able to talk with us today. Can you talk a bit about your interest in the Philippines elections? What specifically brought you to the Philippines? I understand it's your second time being in the Philippines as an election observer.
Yes, well, in Montreal, I have been involved in supporting the Immigrant Worker Center in Cotonou, which is in a Filipino community. In Montreal, it's in Cotonou, which is an area where there's a lot of Filipino immigrants. And given my work in the community in Montreal, I was invited to go to the Philippines in 2007 for the midterm elections, and again in 2010, just recently, to observe the presidential elections. Now, the People's International Observers Mission is a civil society project which involves activists from around the world. For these elections, there was activists from every continent, over 80 delegates from around the globe, really. And those delegates were dispatched throughout the country to observe the presidential election. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I'd say this project developed because of the human rights situation in the Philippines. In the past decade, there's been over 1,000 political killings, mainly targeting progressive parties in the country, activists, student leaders, union organizers, progressive journalists. So the reality is being quite daunting for those struggling for social change in the Philippines in the past decade. And that was all under the administration of Gloria Arroyo, who's the outgoing president, strongly backed by both the United States and Canada. Mm-hmm. So these political killings form a backdrop to the electoral process and the elections, because around each election, progressive activists are facing intimidation. I'd say that one of the main reasons we see this hike in violence directed towards social movements in the country is because there's been success in the electoral realm. Since 2001 elections here in the Philippines, progressive parties have made gains. Parties like Bayan Muna, which means people first, which is intimately tied to social movements here in the country, to urban poor communities, to landless peasants associations, to factory workers. The economy in this country is quite severe in the sense that a recent survey indicated that 69% of the country self-identified as poor. And in the last 10 years, 5 million more people fell below the poverty line, making the total of citizens in this country who are living in poverty at almost 50 million. So this is a huge segment of the society that is living in extreme circumstances. Given those extreme circumstances, social movements who are fighting for change are quite strong, and those social movements have been facing repression. And so that's kind of the backdrop to the elections, is that atmosphere of political tension, violence, political killings that we don't often hear about when we read about the Philippines and Canada. But it's actually one of the most dangerous countries in the world for journalists and also for labor activists, union activists. The most dangerous country for journalists because consistently journalists are gunned down for expressing their views or exposing, you know, truths when it comes to malpractice, corruption on the part of the government or corporations. A dangerous country for labor leaders because consistently strikes are broken up by assassinations that target head union activists. For example, in the Philippines right now, there's an ongoing strike around a Nestle factory in the country, Nestle Corporation, and some of the activists involved in organizing that strike were killed. So it's within that context that I'm here in the Philippines and I'm observing the presidential election here in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about your experience as an international observer and what has been going on and what is going on right now on the ground.
Yeah. Well, on May 10th, the Philippines experienced their first automated election. So that's the first automated election in all of Asia, fully automated. There was over 50 million registered voters that took to the polls on May 10th. So a huge process. And the election was administered by a foreign corporation. So that was striking, shocking for me, because you had a private multinational corporation administering the democratic process in the Philippines, a company called Smartmatic, who was commissioned to provide the infrastructure for the automated vote. On election day, I was stationed in an urban poor community called Payatas, which is in the Manila region and the capital region of the Philippines. This community, Payatas, is famous around the world because you can find documentaries that focus on this community, because it's a community that makes its living primarily from the garbage. It's located just beside what's called the Garbage Mountain, and it's the main center for garbage in the Manila region. It's literally a mountain of garbage, and residents make a living by sorting the garbage, picking up recyclable metals, living in extremely impoverished conditions. And in 2000, part of that mountain collapsed and killed hundreds of the local residents in a landslide. So the conditions are quite severe. I was stationed in this area during the elections because there's quite a large community, and so a lot of votes are there. But what I saw on election day was systemic malfunctioning of the electronic voting system I talked about before, the automated elections. So basically, the machines consistently were breaking down. Certainly, some residents did cast their ballots, but there was systemic breakdown of the electronic machines, creating long lines and havoc around the voting centers. Beyond that, there were many voters, especially those who are tied to progressive political parties, who were disenfranchised. What I mean by that was, on election day, when they showed up, their names were not on voting lists. So that was really problematic. And then beyond that, you had situations where the voting was happening in public schools across the country, so including the community that I observed the elections in, which is Payatas, just outside of Manila, an urban poor area. The school where I observed the election, I'll just give you an example, there would be 19 precincts, so each precinct would have 1,000 voters. So 19,000 voters passed through one small school in one day, and so the scene was just chaotic because of the malfunctioning of the automated electoral system, the voting machines. So, you know, it's quite clear that there was disenfranchisement within urban poor areas. Certainly people did cast their ballots, but some people were disenfranchised. You know, and beyond that, there's an atmosphere of political repression that exists around urban poor communities like Payatas here in Manila. On election day, I went to Payatas, but I was also there before the elections. And if you talk to community activists, let's say healthcare workers in the community or community organizers, they were facing quite severe repression on the part of the armed forces of the Philippines. That's the national army here in the country. That's actually backed up by a joint training program with Canada. But activists have faced intimidation, harassment, and even killings on the part of the army, those who are involved in movements that are fighting to oppose the economic injustice in the country or the outgoing government. That kind of social violence and political violence provides really the atmosphere through which we can understand the elections.
Tell us more about the irregularities that were observed by international election observers. I understand many of them were Canadian, and that there was other really intense violence, political repression that was witnessed by some of the observers. Like, for example, the shooting in Lanao.
Yes.
And the situation in Hacienda Luisita.
Yes.
Are you able to talk about those?
Well, yeah, I mean, across the country there was violence. In Mindanao, shootings took place at the actual voting centers. So when we hear U.S. or European Union officials stating that the elections in the Philippines were free and fair, I think it's important to remember that people died in these elections. Many people were shot. In Lanao del Sur, there was shootings within the polling centers. Members of my mission, the People's International Observers Mission, were at the polling center when the shooting took place. Across the country and in other regions, say in Bicol or in Quezon province, people openly witnessed the armed forces of the Philippines entering into the voting centers, playing such a severe role that they were able to be in the same room where people were voting, the military. So that's an obvious violation of people's democratic right to choose who they want as electoral representatives. If you have an army soldier standing beside you when you're voting, I don't think it's really credible then to say that people's democratic rights were respected. Beyond that, across the country, there was the systemic malfunctioning of the automated elections. So I think it's really important to bring into question the validity of this recent presidential election in the Philippines. I think it's particularly important for Canada because we have a huge Filipino diaspora in the country, in all the major city centers across the country. And a lot of that diaspora from the Philippines is leaving here, is leaving the Philippines because of this political violence that exists, because of the political turmoil, because of the economic instability and the basic economic injustice of the country. People are leaving, making that choice, dramatic choice, to come to Canada, one where they pick up and leave their entire culture and family behind. Not an easy decision, but people are forced to make that decision because of the political atmosphere here in the country. I think maybe just for other listeners to think about it in a more historical context, we could look at the level of repression and violence here in the Philippines today as related in a historical sense to the repression that we saw in Central America in the 1980s, where we also saw progressive movements on the left moving into political office, gaining support and influence, and then falling under the gun, being met with bullets and bombs on the part of the government at that time backed by the United States. Again, I think we're seeing a very similar situation today in the Philippines, different time period, but similar tactics and a similar political turmoil that forces many people to leave the country either for economic welfare or to escape political persecution.
That's a really good parallel. The reason why I brought up what was going on in Hacienda Luisita, because I know that there's a big piece of land there owned by the presidential candidate destined to win, and then there were shootings there, and the farmers, when they went on strike there, they got shot. And I just know a little bit about that story. Would you like to tell us more about the voting machines, about them not working, the brownouts and all
that? Yes. Well, I mean, it's just, I think if we think critically about the electronic vote here in the Philippines, we can look at it as an outsourcing of democracy. And what I mean by that is, you have an automated electoral system that was outsourced to a private corporation. So you have a company that's completely unaccountable to the public here, being granted billions of pesos, which is hundreds of millions of dollars, to administer an automated vote here in the country. And they, at the same time as providing the electronic infrastructure for this automated election, made a huge profit. So there's this foreign corporation, Smartmatic, that's making a profit off of the democratic process here in the Philippines, which I think is kind of symbolic of the larger policies of the last government of the Philippines, but successive governments, where they're willing to farm off key elements of the public infrastructure to the hands of foreign companies. For example, a corporation here operating in the Philippines, mining corporation, or corporation that is operating major factories, for example, Ford, or Nestle, they're able to create a situation where their factories are operating with Filipino labor, but they're able to take 100% of the profits back home. So there's actually no taxes imposed on foreign corporations that are operating in the Philippines. So it's basically a scorched earth type of economic policy, which provides no fuel to create a public infrastructure that will actually benefit the Filipinos who are making the work of these corporations, multinationals here in the country, possible. But this is not, you know, random. It didn't just happen this way. Politicians here are making those decisions, right? And so social movements are attempting to hold those politicians accountable, challenging those policies. But instead of engaging with social movements that are critiquing them, the government here is shooting them. So I just put that framework because when we think about the automated elections and the fact that these electoral systems provided by this foreign corporation were breaking down, yes, that was happening, but it was happening in the broader context where these foreign corporations are entering the Philippines with total disregard and blatant disrespect towards the Filipino people, Filipino workers. You know, and these are sweeping statements, but when you have union activists being shot, when you have national elections privatized by a company that, you know, for example, on election day, I was, you know, in one center with 19,000 voters. There's another center with 24,000 people expected to vote on one day. And for 24,000 people, the foreign corporation provided one staff to man all of the electronic machines. So it was a skeletal operation, kind of a neoliberal model of what a public institution could be. One staff for one day for 24,000 voters. So it just literally becomes impossible to make the election a full success. And so I think it kind of speaks to the disrespect of these foreign corporations for the rights of Filipino people. If this is a democracy, that means that people's rights for democratic choice should be respected. And if you're providing, as a foreign company administering the vote, one person as staff for 24,000 voters, that's blatant disrespect. And I think that the Canadian government, when they're taking their position in regards to the recent election from the Philippines, needs to publicly take the role of Smartmatic and the dysfunctional role it played on election day into consideration.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the voting machines and the military and their intimidation tactics. And how about the issue of the vote buying and other cases of state-encouraged corruption and violence? Do you want to speak about that?
Yeah, the corruption surrounds the elections. Vote buying happens across the country. People are paid small amounts to vote. But that's generally because of... That's generally because of the political injustice and economic injustice. So if people can make a small amount of money selling off their votes, they will. Because at the end of the day, if their democratic choice isn't respected, and what I mean by that is that every election here, and I was here in 2007 also, there was systemic corruption around the counting of votes. So progressive parties on the left systemically were disenfranchised by the counting system. And so poor people who are supporting those parties, obviously at a certain point, are going to lose faith of a system where their rights aren't being respected. And if that means they can eat for two more days by selling their vote, they're forced into that situation because of poverty. So some people make that choice. It's a small number of people, but some people do. And politicians in the country, mainstream politicians, exploit that poverty by buying poor people's votes. So it's a vicious cycle. And I put the emphasis and the blame of the vote-buying system on the major political parties in the country, the outgoing administration of Gloria Arroyo, the incoming administration of Aquino. Both those major dynasty-based political parties are involved in vote buying because they can, because they have opulent amounts of wealth, and the impoverished masses in the country are either in a situation where their democratic rights aren't respected, their votes aren't counted, and they're so poor that a few more pesos of cash is going to allow them to eat for the day. So politicians exploit that. So it's really complicated because that poverty really forms a backdrop to understanding the whole democratic process. And, you know, I would say people don't choose to be poor in the sense that can you really have a democracy where so many people are impoverished and all the major political parties are playing a role in that impoverishment. And if you really looked at the choices election after election throughout the past decades, you could say that people's choices were never respected in terms of the vote because people didn't vote for any of these politicians here in the country to remain poor. They voted for these politicians because they wanted change, including the U.S.-backed administration over the last 10 years. Some people did vote for that administration, but they voted for that administration because they promised change and political justice, but none of that ever happened. So their hopes and dreams were manipulated and undermined and stomped on. And that's really the political reality in the country, where you have a majority of people who are impoverished and then exploited, whether it comes to work, whether it comes to their votes, whether it comes to daily life.
You've done a great job on showing how all these state crimes and state-encouraged repression and injustice shape the election results. I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to Migrant Matters Radio on Guelph's Community Radio on CFRU 93.3 FM. I'm Mary, and we're in touch with Stéphane Christophe. Stéphane is a Montreal-based journalist and community organizer who, along with the People's International Observers Mission, is in the Philippines right now and has been in the Philippines during the May national and local elections. Find updates posted by Stéphane while he's in Manila at twitter.com/SPIRODON. Stéphane, what are some of the biggest political impediments to having democratic elections in the Philippines historically and today? And you touched a bit about this.
Yeah. Well, I would just say, you know, quickly that Canada, when thinking about the elections here in the country, should think critically about the whole process. You know, the major impediment to real participation in the democracy here in the Philippines, I'd say, is a political culture of violence. And I did speak about this, but I'll just maybe try to bring in another point about political violence. The fact is that you have the armed forces of the Philippines playing active political role in defining politics in this country. So on election day, soldiers are stationed throughout the voting centers, as we discussed. But beyond that, you have soldiers patrolling urban poor areas and landless peasants, communities, also peasant communities around union-organized factories, and they're patrolling around with weapons, automated weapons, machine guns. They play a huge role in trying to shape the political process in this country. And I don't think you can truly have a democratic process when the military, the armed forces of the Philippines, which has been found to be involved in political killings by both UN officials, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch have all directly implicated the armed forces of the Philippines in these political killings. So if that same body that's directly involved in political killings is patrolling civilian areas consistently and providing an atmosphere where intimidation is a reality, I think we have to call into question the validity of the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. What can you add to everything that we've been talking about that people are not hearing in the mainstream media? What else?
Well, I just think it's important to think critically about slogans that we hear in the media headlines around the world. When we see terms like democracy, when we see terms like election in relation to the Philippines, but more broadly, I think we should always investigate because a country like the Philippines is struggling to find justice after hundreds of years of colonization, first from the Spanish, then by the Americans, the United States, which the Philippines was a direct colony of the United States for the first half of the 20th century. So direct colonial rule in the sense of the U.S. basically having veto power over successive governments here in the Philippines. And beyond that, the Philippines being a major center for the U.S. military throughout Asia. And so for half a century, Philippines was basically a pseudo-colony of the United States. Today, I'd say the Philippines has fallen victim to being a neoliberal economy of multinational corporations, in the sense that companies are operating here in conditions where huge profits are possible because workers or peasants are paid so little in terms of salary that really you could say that the practices amount to human rights violations against the working people here and the working poor. So when we think about and hear reports about elections in the Philippines, we have to think critically about them because there's a whole socioeconomic reality of injustice that exists and provides the atmosphere in which these elections happen. And beyond that, there's a whole atmosphere of political violence that I talked about before in terms of targeted killings against progressive activists in the country, over 1,000 in the past decade, that provides the backdrop to which these elections are happening. So think critically about them, and also think critically about Canadian government statements that support overtly, without questioning, government administrations in this country, because it's clear on doubtful that successive administrations have been involved directly in perpetuating these injustices, political killings, and economic injustice, which brings millions and millions of people into extreme poverty every year here in the country, here in the Philippines.
What can be expected for the future of the Philippines under the new elected officials? Even I know the vote, they haven't tallied up all the votes yet.
Yeah, well, one of the big questions that is on the tips of many people's tongues is if the incoming administration of Noynoy Aquino will respect human rights. Mm-hmm. The outgoing administration, Gloria Arroyo, president, was condemned internationally for human rights violations, mainly around political killings, but beyond that, around a whole situation where the armed forces of the Philippines were repressing social movements. In 2006, the outgoing administration appealed for a state of emergency and actually banned demonstrations and allowed arrests and detention without charge. That was condemned globally. The incoming presidential candidate, Noynoy Aquino, hasn't said clearly he will halt these policies. And beyond that, has actually said explicitly in different interviews that he is going to hike the funding of armed forces that are involved in repression against left movements in the country. So that seems like a similar pattern, a similar tone to the outgoing administration. It's clear that many people voted for Aquino, but they voted for Aquino because he claimed at certain points that these policies of human rights violations will end. After the election has happened, in multiple interviews, he's striking a different tone. So it really remains to be seen what happens. But I think the most interesting thing to watch are the social movements in the country. So groups like Bayan, which means nation or people, it's BAYAN.ph. Mm-hmm. I'd really encourage people to check it out. It's a broad-based social movement in the country, and you can get detailed information about different struggles that are happening. And I think for listeners who want to be educated about the reality on the ground beyond the headlines should look to groups like Bayan for more detail.
What are your wishes or thoughts on the future of the Philippines? And also, what are some possible solutions in your view? You talked a little bit about with the thinking critically.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, as an activist in Canada, in Montreal, I'm trying to support grassroots movements here in the country, social movements, ones that are involved directly in struggles for democracy, for change. And I think that they are providing hope for a better future in the country. It's one of the most exciting countries in the world when it comes to social movements. It's really quite incredible. If you look at the organizing that's taking place through organizations like the KMU, which is the May 1st movement, the workers' movement, They've unionized huge sectors of factory workers, industrial workers in the country, are staging major labor strikes against injustice for minimum wage to be raised. Minimum wage in this country is actually below the minimum cost of daily life as calculated by even the government ministry. So the minimum wage is lower than the estimated daily cost of living. So that doesn't really equate to being able to survive. So obviously one struggle is to raise the minimum wage to adjust salary. So if you have a minimum wage that doesn't allow one to buy basic necessities of food, shelter, and clothing, then we're talking about a situation of exploitation. So any Canadian corporation that's actively producing materials or operating in the country is participating in that injustice, because it's almost certain that they're paying minimum wage or below. So when we look to the Philippines, I think we should look and learn about social movements like workers' movements, but also landless peasants' movements, also progressive journalists. There's a really amazing website called Bulatlat, which means to seek knowledge in Tagalog. You can find their website online at www.bulatlat.com. That's BUTLATLAT.com. And, you know, there's many more examples, but those are just a few.
This is all really fantastic, everything that you've shared with us. What's fantastic is that we're right now helping expose some hidden or forcibly kept from being revealed to the public and kept from being circulated in the public, some key factors and dynamics that are propping up the continued fatal oppression, colonization, and the many other forms of violence against the working class people native to the Philippines and the ecological world there. Thank you so much for going to be an observer down there, and thank you for your courage and working to get media on this struggle.
My pleasure.
Again, if you didn't catch us in the beginning or in the middle of the interview, I'm speaking with Stéphane Christophe, who is a Montreal-based journalist and community organizer who is currently in the Philippines with the People's International Observers Mission to observe the May national and local elections. And Stéphane is posting updates from Manila at www.twitter.com/spirodon.